Thank you, Magnus. You actually pronounced that pretty well. Yeah. Okay, good morning, everybody. Thanks. My name is Patrick van Dorp, and I'm a technology consultant for a company called Sagetti in the Netherlands. And yes, I'm in a Windows Azure MVP. And before coming up here, Alan, who just entered the room, sent all the speakers a speaker guide to Stockholm. And somewhere in the speaker guide, he said that you Swedes like to talk about the weather. Is that correct? Yeah, who doesn't? So I could easily talk for an hour about this picture here, right? So there's the cloudburst, and everything else seems to be rather calm, right? But I'm not. I will talk about cloud computing, of course. Why am I going to talk about cloud computing? Well, nowadays, almost every self-respecting company is developing or has developed some sort of a cloud strategy. And that hasn't been the case always. So I would like to take you on a journey from the beginning of Windows Azure, sort of like a history lesson, and take you up to now, and then I will explain why my slides look the way they look right now. So if we look at the cloud sentiment of 2008-2009, right, before Windows Azure became commercially available, we see that our customers weren't very well informed about cloud computing. They didn't really, they hadn't really heard about the concept, and we really needed to explain the concept. We really needed to explain the benefits of cloud. We even saw that our own organizations didn't really know what cloud was, and they didn't understand the possibilities that cloud would have to offer for our organizations. But as a developer, we got introduced with Windows Azure and CTP, right? So we were very, very enthusiastic. We went to several conferences about cloud computing, and we went playing with it. So what did that mean for the skills we needed as an IT person, right? We needed to deal with load-balanced environments. I don't know about you, but before this, I would develop like a web application. I would throw it over the wall to some IT pro, and they would have it land somewhere, right? I wouldn't have a clue where it landed. Now, we needed to design for failure, because in the cloud, we suddenly learned that machines could fail, right? That was a new concept. We also needed to learn all sorts of new application patterns. We needed to learn about true statelessness. Before, we thought web applications were stateless, and they turned out not to be stateless. Right? We had these things called cookies, and the cookies were encrypted by a data protection API, which was not working when you're working in a load-balanced environment. We had to deal with throttling. We heard a lot about throttling yesterday. We needed to learn new words like idempotent. Who of you has looked up the word idempotent after Martin has mentioned it yesterday? No one. You all knew what idempotent was, right? Right? Okay. I didn't in 2009, so I had to look it up. Right? And for us developers, we wanted to get in a professional, we wanted to work with Windows Azure in a professional level. We wanted to work on production environments. So the only way to get our salespeople to get selling this, we needed to excite them and convince them that this was going to be the next big thing, right? So in February 2010, Windows Azure was released commercially. And we suddenly saw that our customers have heard of cloud computing, but they were still very afraid of it. Especially the term public cloud was maybe the worst choice, right? My data is next to the data of my competitor. That's scary. Now, our own organizations realized the potential of cloud, right? And our own organizations started all sorts of special programs to help these scary customers, or the scared customers. Some of them were scary, yeah. These scared customers to take their first steps into the cloud, right? There were programs like Azure Privilege Club, Azure Circle, there were Windows Azure Boot Camps, Azure Academies, you name it. All right, now the cloud platform, Windows Azure, was rapidly evolving. So there were new features every time. SDKs were updated. Due to the SDKs update, we needed to deal with broken code, right? But suddenly, because we were working on production systems, we came across all sorts of real-world issues, like customers using MDAC drivers to export to Excel, right? We wanted to do that in the cloud, and Windows Azure was a purely platform-as-a-service offering, making this a challenge sometimes. So in 2011, we see that our customers... I told you it's going to be a history lesson. In 2011, we see that our customers are seeing the benefits of cloud, and they start asking about this platform they heard of, Windows Azure, right? We needed to explain it to them, but they had a certain enterprise-level issues with it, right? They liked the way you could deploy an application to the cloud, but the integration with their existing infrastructure was hard to realize, right? So we, as IT organizations, were struggling finding answers to those specific integration needs. Like, we had Service Bus, we had Windows Azure Connect, we had Access Control Service, but that's about what we had. So, as a developer, we kind of did the same things, right? We needed to learn new things for the platform, and we needed to find integration solutions. Now, in 2012, there was this new thing. Windows Azure went infrastructure as a service. And suddenly, we had these integration possibilities. We could move existing server products to the cloud and make our platform as a service applications communicate with those existing applications. So now we had the integration. We could literally move anything to the cloud. And we could see that in our company, because this was in CTP, or preview it's called, we could see that we were using Windows Azure Virtual Machines and Windows Azure Virtual Network for dev test environments. Right, training environments. Something's going on. So now we went to the customer, and you've probably seen this picture a lot of times, right? As you get higher up the as-a-service stack, right, you're going to invest less, you're going to manage less, and you're going to pay less, right? And that's actually what C-level executives like to hear. So if we look at their skills, as a developer, we basically did the same things, right? We needed to learn new things because the platform was rapidly developing. But suddenly, we needed to learn about Hyper-V, and we needed to learn about classless inter-domain routing IP addressing schemes, right? We had this back at school, but this was a long time ago. We needed to learn about VPN. We needed to learn about Linux and all sorts of open source products. So it became time that we learned how to convince the IT pro to get excited about Windows Azure. So this year has been really awesome. This year, our customers, as I said, are developing or have developed real cloud strategies. And they are coming to us with requests for complete data center migrations, right? If you would have asked me this 18 months ago, I would have said, well, not in a million years, right? There will be always something remaining on-premise, but we're actually working on systems now, on data center migrations, where they say by the end of this year, we want our data center to be empty and we want everything running in the cloud. So these systems are really complex. This is not just the technology. It's also process changes, and service management changes, right? So what we're seeing now is that due to the complexity of these systems, we see services being developed like SkySight, which is a joint venture between Capgemini, Microsoft, and Sagetti, which offers orchestration for the various aspects of your cloud environment. So now we see that the IT Pro is learning about Windows Azure. IT Pro is learning about Windows Azure virtual machines because it's just a little bit different than a Hyper-V virtual machine. IT Pro is learning how to connect to Windows Azure virtual network. Our IT Pros need to learn about cloud services in the context of a security boundary, right? They need to know about the load balancers in the cloud services and all that sort of stuff. They needed to learn about Linux. And as they are getting excited, they want to get their hands on this in real life. And they need to excite their salespeople. So if we're looking at those complex environments, and we've seen the portal a number of times, but those complex environments, if we're talking about hundreds of servers you need to manage in the cloud, the most important skill that is to be learned now is Windows PowerShell, right? And with that, Windows Azure PowerShell. So yesterday, a couple of people asked who of you were developers, right? Most of you were developers. So as a developer, you all know PowerShell, right? Yeah? How many of you know PowerShell? That's actually a lot, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's true. So why PowerShell? You already know. If you're a developer, you live in Visual Studio, and if you want to do anything in Windows Azure, as we've seen, you need to switch your application. So you need to switch to the management portal, right? Then you log in, and then you wait. And you wait some more. And if you're lucky, one of the things you want to see is loaded first. If not, you get presented by this. Right. So remember, we have like a subscription with hundreds of servers, right? And every VM has a cloud service. So we have doubled that on items. So this is not very useful. Then we have like four subscriptions per customer, right? We have development, we have tests, we have acceptance, we have production, something like that. So we can filter this on subscription. And we can filter this on a certain aspect of Windows Azure. But still, if I have 100 cloud services, for instance, this wouldn't be very useful. I can't filter this any further, right? So, of course, we've already seen it. Windows Visual Studio has some improved tooling for dealing with Windows Azure, and this is getting better every time, right? I don't believe this is the latest version. I didn't have the time to look at the latest version, but the problem remains, right? So, just think of what this would look like if you had like 100 cloud services. Now, you already told us that a lot of you are using NuGet, right? NuGet comes with the package manager console, and as you use NuGet, you probably have entered something like install package or something like that, right? So we can easily just execute the Windows Azure PowerShell commandlets from the NuGet. So you don't really need to leave Visual Studio to do anything with it. right? I can say get Azure service, and it goes out to the web and it gets all this information for me. I can say get Azure VM, and if I just want a list of the names, I can just pipe this to select name. And it will get me a list of the names that are in there, right? Okay. So actually what I have encountered talking about PowerShell to a lot of people, because you guys really are the exception to that, because you already know PowerShell, you say. But when I talk to developers, they're telling me, well, PowerShell, that's a thing for IT pros, right? It's scripting. We are programming. It's something different. So, that's true. I mean, does anybody know what this does? Yeah? All right. It just prints out a list of files and directories in the current directory, right? All right. Let me just clear the screen here. Does anybody knows what this does? Same thing. Right. We have a Linux specialist here, right? It does exactly the same thing. Who likes to type this? You like to type this? Okay. What does anybody know what this does?
We can see it.
All right. Just remember me to clear the screen when I do this. Okay. Can anybody tell me what this does? Same thing. Oh. Okay. Why is that? Right? In PowerShell, we have something that's called aliases. And I can say get alias for get child item. Nope. I need to do it the other way around. Get alias for dir. And I get child item. Right? So if you're an IT pro, yeah, and you're used to maintaining Linux box, you can just as well use PowerShell for that. No problem. Right, you can just use the commands you are used to, and underneath it will execute the PowerShell. Now, what command would you enter when you want to have a list of all your environment variables?
Set.
Now, what's this about? Right, I need to enter a name. I don't know what this is. Right. So if I can see that it's calling the commandlet set variable, right? So set variable is alias to set, right? It's not what we want. Now in PowerShell we have this great notion of PS drives, right? And we can literally get the environment variables this way, right? There are also some variables, and a variable starts with a dollar sign, and env is one of them, and you get all the environment variables there, right? So this is still a little bit IT pro-y, right? Is that a new word? IT pro-y?
IT pro-y.
IT pro-y. Okay. Yeah. Okay, but what about this? That's no longer IT pro-y, right? That's more developer-y. That doesn't sound. But it works. We get all the environment variables. So an IT pro, when I talk to a developer, he's referring to the first part. He says PowerShell is for IT pros. But when I talk to an IT pro, an IT pro says, what? Objects? .NET framework, I don't know what you're talking about, right? So it's a little bit in between. And that's why I think that this is the most important skill to learn for an IT pro as well as for a developer. Now, to work with the Windows Azure commandlets, you need to do a couple of things, and obviously I've done it here already. But first of all, you need to go and download your publishing profile, like you're used to from the portal, right? I actually think there's a commandlet for that. I don't know it by heart. Okay, if you don't know the commandlet by heart, this is the fun part about PowerShell, right? It's exploring the possibilities. So I can say show command, and then I get to use this thing. And I can select a module, and I get all the commandlets that are in that module. Later on, you can create your own modules, and you can extend this to whatever you want. But there are all these commandlets, and you could just look at them. You can get help for a commandlet. What was that? Oh, I need to. Okay. Okay, forget that. I won't go there. Okay, but the point is, you can do update help instead of get help. It will download all the help files from internet for you. I haven't done this on this demo box. So, but that's basically the thing. Another thing you can do is get Azure service, and you can pipe this. Everybody is familiar with the pipe sign. Right, this was already there in CMD, right? You could pipe something to more, and if your result was larger than a single screen, it would just pause, and when you hit like a button, it would continue. I can pipe this to another commandlet, get member, and we get a really familiar view, right? This is the type that is returned by getMember, right? It's a Microsoft.WindowsAzure.Management.ServiceManagement.Model.Host. It's service detailed context. That went really fluent. And there are methods on this, right? This is an object. So that's really important. There are methods on this. You can call the methods if you like. You can do some piping and stuff. So after we download the Windows Azure published settings files, we can import them, right? And I've already done this. Users, like that. I put it in downloads / published settings files / right. We have auto completion. We have IntelliSense in this tool. This is PowerShell ISE, which is a great tool for working with PowerShell, right? You can do it from within Visual Studio, but Visual Studio doesn't have the auto-completion for PowerShell. There is a VizX, but you need to install an older version of Power GUI, I think. It's a little bit buggy. I'm not a big fan of that. But actually, you can just select the published settings files, and you're exporting this into your session. And after that, you need to, this is the great thing. You can just explore, right? I can say get subscription and pipe this to select subscription name. Nope. Right, I get the subscription name of the subscriptions, and I can just pick one of them. Right, I need to select one. Azure subscription. MSDN 2. And if I do another get subscription, I can just query for the current. And there's my subscription. As you can see, I have a current storage account already set to place. So this is my context. This is what all my commandlets will work with, right? It will work with this storage account. I can set a SQL Azure service endpoint and that sort of stuff. You can find the certificate, thumbprint, the subscription ID, everything. So this is what I'll be working with. Okay, back to the slides. That we saw. Okay, let's go to another example, right? Why should you use PowerShell? So suppose we are already logged in. We've waited. We selected virtual machines. Now we want to create a new virtual machine, right? Well, we typically go to new compute virtual machine and then select an image from the gallery. We fill in some configuration. We fill in some more configuration and even more configuration. And then we wait, right? That's basically how it works in the portal. Now, don't get me wrong. I really like the portal. I like working with a graphical UI, right? But when you're managing like 100 servers, this is not the way you want to do it. So let's see how we do this in PowerShell. I'm just loading in some variables here. In PowerShell, we can first create a service. Now, I find this to be a best practice, right? First create the service. Well, first create the affinity group, then create a service, and then bind as many as you like, as many VMs as you like to the cloud service. So let's create a service. Right, it says succeeded. So if I do get Azure service, it will actually get me a number. Let me first show you the variables I've entered. Right, I've entered a service name that's called where is it? Cloudburst Demo 2 West Europe. So if I do get Azure service, and pipe this to service name, select service name, then you see that the Cloudburst Demo 2 WE is created. Right. Now we're going to create the configuration. In the portal, we needed to enter the configuration, three steps in the wizard, right? So this is really quick. This is just building an internal representation of this configuration. And then to actually create the virtual machine, we need to call the new Azure VM commandlet. And now it will reach out to the management API of Windows Azure, and it will go and create the virtual machine. Any questions so far? None. Okay, now this takes a little while, because I suppose that the message I sent is being validated, it's being enriched, something like that, before I get a success back. While we're waiting for this, let me show you another thing. Because I've shown you that you need to import the Azure Publish settings, right? And you need to select a subscription. You need to do that every time you open up this environment. Now, PowerShell works with profiles. And you can enter anything in the profile, and it will execute on the time you are opening your new session, right? So the new Azure VM creation task has returned. Windows Azure is now creating and provisioning the Windows Azure VM. I'll get back to that later. But if we just we can open up a new file in PowerShell ISE just by typing ISE and then the name of the file, right? And there's a pretty useful variable. It's called profile. So if you open up profile, you can see that I've done some PowerShelling here to make things easy for me, right? So when I open up a new session, a new PowerShell session, the importing of the publish settings file, I can specify which publish settings file I want to use, right? And my next step is to just retrieve a list of subscriptions that are in the public settings file and presenting them in a nice way, so that I just have to type like 4. And if I do a get Azure subscription current, then we have this subscription. Right. If I didn't do this, let me just do it again. Right. Open up a new session. Oh well. I cannot do this in here. Okay. 2. Let's just try another one. 2. Right now it's a different one, right? So that's something handy. Okay, back to the demo. Right, we just created the VM, and now I can get the Azure VM like so. Right, and I can get the information. It's still provisioning, so I cannot get any further information. Maybe the endpoint is already there, right? So we can really format what we want to see, right? So I can format my endpoints like this, and this is because I'm calling format table, and I'm just specifying the properties I want to see, and I'm using the auto size so it gets nice and compact, right? So you can really generate an overview of your components in Windows Azure the way you, and in every way you like. Okay, so I forgot to add some data disks, right? Suppose I want to install SQL Server on there or an Active Directory domain controller. We need data disks. So in the portal, we are logged in. We select our virtual machine. We attach an empty data disk. We fill in some configuration, and we wait. And we really need to wait until this is finished before we can add the second one, right? Now let's see how this works in PowerShell. So just for purposes of continuation of the session, I've created a virtual machine already without any data disks, and we can get the configuration of that virtual machine. I'll explain to you what the form is. We can get the configuration of the virtual machine, store it in a variable, right, and we can get the number of disks with a range operator, so from 0 to 1, so 2 disks. And we can iterate it, and we can append it to the configuration, right? And once we've done that, we can pipe the configuration. This is another way to do this to the update Azure VM, and then the disks will get added. Now this is like creating the VM. It will take some time, right? So in the portal, we needed to wait until things were finished. In PowerShell, we can start jobs, and we can just continue after that, right? So if I execute this. If I execute the start job, it will create a new session. And in the new session, I don't have my my Azure context. So I will need to build up my Azure context. So that's what I'm basically doing here, right? So all this is doing is it's creating a job, as you can see. And we can get the job status from this ID4. I get the status, right? State is still blocked. I cannot do anything with it yet. So this takes a little while, but I can use my PowerShell to continue on, right? I can do other things right now. I can do this to another machine if I'd like. Now, we could call wait job. Right, and then we would have to wait here until this is finished. I'm not going to do that. And after a job is finished, you can say a receive job, and you will get the result of the job, right? And you can do anything with it. It's the same result as you would get from executing it synchronously. Okay. So I've done this up front on another machine. I've added two disks, all right? And what has happened with those two disks? Now, yesterday we saw that we could open up a browser from the command line, right? We can open up an RDP session from a PowerShell commandlet as well. So let's do that. Okay, that went quick. That went quicker than I thought. Okay, so now it's starting up Server Manager. This is always the case in Windows Server 2012 and later. Oh well, we can speed this up. I can open up Compute Management. I'm just going to look at the two drives I've just added, right? There it is. So when I go to Disk Management, I get immediately prompted by this. So the two disks were added, right? But they weren't even initialized. So we have to go and do that. We need to create a volume, and we need to format the disks. So I'm going to I could have done it right now but I didn't want to open up an RDP session, of course, because we already had our did I close it? I'm sorry for that. I closed the wrong session. So, but we were already in our PowerShell environment. So you don't want to change your environment anymore. You're just in PowerShell. You can do anything with PowerShell if you know what you're doing. It really closed everything. Okay. That's strange. I'm sorry for that. What did I do? I just closed the session, right? Am I logged into the wrong machine? I'm logged into the wrong machine. That's it. I think it's this one. There it is. This is not it. Finding the right machine, the right demo machine. This isn't it either. I cannot demo this from my own machine because it's using a random high port. Oh, come on. This thing should be this one. Ah, there it is. Okay. So we didn't want to open up this. So there's this notion of PowerShell remoting. So I'm sorry for that. Sorry for the interruption. There's this notion of PowerShell remoting, right? So as you could see, when we created a virtual machine, there were two endpoints automatically created. One is for remote desktop, and one is for remote PowerShell. There's by default, there's a certificate involved with the connection to the remote PowerShell, right? SSL is used. We need to make sure that that certificate is installed in the root certificate store on the machine where we're going to execute the PowerShell remotely, right? To do that, I've created this helper commandlet that just goes out to the virtual machine, gets the default WinRM certificate thumbprint, just verifies that it's in the local machine root store. If it's not, it's going to download it and install it as well. So I just need to execute this. And for getting a drive letter, I've got some helper methods that resolves a disk number to a drive letter. And I've got some PowerShell to format the disk to initialize and that sort of stuff. So this is what's going to get executed on the box. Okay. Did I execute this one? Okay. So first of all, I need to get the certificate. Right, it will get the thumbprint, it will store it in a temp file, it will open up the temp file and import it in the certificate store. Now we need to get the endpoint for WinRM. Right, there's a very handy PowerShell commandlet for that, get Azure WinRM URI. And I store it in a variable. I also need to provide some credentials, and those are the credentials in this case that I'm using for RDPing into the box. That didn't go. Okay. Now, let's continue. Now for every LUN in the number of disks, I'm going to invoke this script block. So this is taking a while, but it's worth waiting. I think I still have time for the next demo. It didn't execute, did it? Oh well. Yeah, I got a credential. I got a URI. So why is this not working? Ah, oh, that's a good one. Nothing. That's a good one. Thank you. Number of disks, 0. Mm-hmm. All right. That's the thing about last minute changes, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Come on. Okay. Yeah, well, it isn't responding, so yeah, sure. Just open it up again to. So there it goes. I need to enter my credentials again. Okay. There it goes. Selected drive F. That's the output of my get drive letter. Now it will get the definition of the format volume or the format disk method. It will pass in the parameters and it will execute this on the disk. As you can see, this is the result that gets returned on the remote computer, which is in the cloud. Okay, moving on. We saw Sam's demonstration about the VPN tunnel, right? Sam promised that I would show you the site-to-site connectivity, and I will. And I will try to show you as much in PowerShell as possible. But virtual network is a new feature, so the PowerShell commands are not as mature as we see with the Windows Azure VM. So there's a lot of XML parsing, right? You can download a network config from the portal. You can download the network config using the PowerShell commandlets. And you can save it in an XML file. And you can get the content of the XML file if you like. And if you cast it to XML, like so, it becomes an XML document. And you can really work with it the way you're working with it in .NET. You can also add elements, change the XML file and upload it to the cloud again to change your network configuration. So first of all, I can get an Azure VNet site, and I'll find the VNet site that starts with Sajeti, and it will get the VNet name. Right, Sajeti VNet. I would have to start a new Azure gateway. I did this up front because this will take several minutes, and I only have six. So, and then just for the parsing of the VPN configuration script, I'm just getting the local network site name. I can get that from the Azure VPN gateway. Now, from the portal, you can download a VPN device configuration script. And that looks a bit like this. You cannot execute this directly on your Cisco. This is a Cisco example, by the way. You cannot execute this directly on your Cisco, right? There are all these placeholders between the fish brackets. You need to replace them with the values that you have configured. Right. So I've created this this method. I've created a hash table. This is the way you create a hash table in PowerShell. And I just copied those placeholders and assigned them a certain value. And by doing so, I can just iterate the hash table and just replace the placeholders with the actual values. So let's do that. Right, so it's basically the same. You do a get content, you get everything in there, you replace it with the actual values, and you do a set content to save it again. Right? Okay. So now I have a configuration file. It's this. Right, I now have the configuration file with the actual values in it. I can just copy all of this. Now, the way we set this up is we have an ASA 5505 set up at the office, allowing, and it has two ports, two IP addresses to it. And one of them allows me to RDP into it, right? So that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to execute the script from the box. So these are my corporate credentials. And I can log into this. This is the most important machine in our network, right? This is the internet radio for our network, guys. So don't mess with this thing. Okay, so this is our Cisco. Everyone can read this. I cannot magnify this. So I need to enter a password. Or username and a password. I need to enter config mode. And right now I can just paste the script I just generated in here. And if I just open a console box saying ping minus T 10.0.1.4, this will be running. This will take a little bit of time, and I probably minus T I did. Let me not make the same mistake as I did before. Go up. Nope. Oh yeah, there it is. So that's that. Back at my machine, I can Um, I can get the status of this connection, right? And connectivity state for the local network site is changed from initializing to connecting. So it did notice something, right? If it didn't, I could execute this line 38, and it would start connecting, right? So this will take a little bit of time. Just execute this again. This is worth waiting, guys. Initializing to connecting. So any questions so far while we wait for this to happen?
When did you become so awesome?
Thanks, mate. Please remain calm. Okay? Oh, there's actually one thing I forgot. Okay. So I'm awesome, but I also forget things, right? Okay, this is... what machine is it? I think it's 3. So demo 3. I'm going to load in this again. And then over here, because I'm pinging, right? And ping is blocked by default. So luckily we have the remote PowerShell, right? I can easily add a firewall rule to my machine. So ping will be allowed right now. And let's go up. Let's try this again. It's still connecting. That doesn't say too much. And 10.0.4. Voila. Right? So the status is a little bit behind. But I can reach my web server through the firewall. And over port 80. I think one of our network guys has, or I just created it in the wrong IP address. But the ICMP packages are blocked on the router. I think maybe I should have done it on any other machine, right? But I can internally through the VPN tunnel I can reach our web server now. So for bursting to the cloud, we have a number of things, right? We've seen that we can, let's just go back to the slides, all the demo stuff, right? We've seen that we can create a lot of resources at the same time easily, right? We don't have to, we can automate it, right? That's one part of bursting to the cloud. Another part is still utilizing your on-premise infrastructure, right? I did this. Okay, so where to go from here? Since you already know PowerShell, I don't have to tell you this, of course, but for the people at home, just go to www.microsoftvirtualacademy.com and search for PowerShell. There are two very cool courses there for PowerShell just to get a basic idea of what it can do and how you can explore certain things with it. Okay, and for those of you interested, you can reach me online. Just follow me on Twitter. If you have any questions left, just reach out to me. Okay. With that, I leave you at the prompt to explore further. Thank you.